This is Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Marjorie Silverman and Bessie Hyman are again interviewing Anita Morgenstern at her home at 6112 Alder Street on Friday, April the 29th.
We were talking about you're doing the publicity for the Pittsburgh International.
Yes, now that was just after I had hepatitis, so the period when I was working at WQED and doing public relations for the Associated Artists was finished. Gordon Washburn persuaded me that I could do the International, and I think we finished talking about that. Is there anything more you want to ask me about that, about the international promotions? I did that on an international scale. I sent material all around the world. And what it did was prove to me that I was well again and I could resume activities after a year languishing on the vine. Shortly after that, we had all that activity in the 60s. The college kids were asserting themselves, and the blacks were asserting themselves, and things were in a mess. And I just felt like I wanted to do something to help conditions. So my love had been, my real love had been working with children and trying to give them a good, healthy start. And through art instruction for children, I felt I could do something like that. So I went to the Board of Education and offered my services to a friend of mine who happened to be supervisor of art in the public schools. And before long, I got a call from the program that administered the Head Start daycare programs in the public schools. And they asked if, they said, I understand you want to do a volunteer job. We need someone who knows something about art education, and could we talk to you? So we got together, and I became the volunteer art consultant for the daycare and Head Start programs. This meant that I did in-service training with professionals and paraprofessionals who were handling children and didn't really, they needed a philosophy of art education. So I did a lot of research to bring it up to date, and I got to work. Before long, they asked me to do it professionally. I don't know why, but they had something in, some money in the budget, and it hadn't been spent, I guess.
Do you have the dates of when you did that?
I have a letter here that just happens, I found. Yes, here's a letter dated 1969 in which Phyllis Lewis, who was director of the Compensatory Education Program for the Board of Health, Board of Education, sent me a little check saying that it was just to show their appreciation for what I had done on a volunteer basis, and after that I became a paid worker.
There are a few things that you told us about yesterday that I would just like to have you speak a little more about. In 1942, you organized the Amateur Artists Association. Do you want to tell us?
That was part of a public relations deal. I had a friend who was editor of the Sun Telegraph, Pittsburgh Sun Telegraph, and I persuaded him that they should promote an exhibition for amateur artists at the Arts and Crafts Center. This, I figured, would bring people into the Arts and Crafts Center because they were sponsors of this exhibition. It meant that they published entry forms, and we had feature stories running in the telly at the rate of two a week for about a month, and that was good promotions for the Arts and Crafts Center. So it was such a big success, the amateur art exhibition called Every Man's Art Show. It's still running. And the artists who exhibited in it liked being with other, they like their association with other dabblers. So they formed the Amateur Artists Association, and I helped them organize it. It's still going strong, and in that article that you have a clipping of, a tear sheet of, I made the statement that I felt like I had given birth to a monster. I still feel that there are too many painters and not enough artists, and I often wonder, did I do these people any favor?
What made you decide to start a creative art class for children?
That came way, way back. That was at the Arts and Crafts Center during the Depression years. Remember I said I charged $5 a month to teach these kids on Saturday, and I pocketed the money, and then with that I went to New York. That was before I was married, really. No, that was after I was married. And I just wanted to earn some money, really. And I enjoyed working with children. They're still having creative art classes.
When did you become a member of the Board of Directors of Arts and Crafts?
Oh, that was about 1949.
Are you still a member?
I just, about 2 years ago, I rejoined the Arts and Crafts Center because I left them flat when I started Pittsburgh Plan for Art. And I burned my bridges behind me, and then a few years ago I went back and said they needed a representative from the Society of Sculptors, and I said, well, I'll do it. I live close by, I'll go to the meetings. And then I got back on their board, and I became an executive, a vice president, and I'm again very active.
Could you tell us something more about the children's section at the Three River Arts Festival?
I knew a girl named Judy Rubin who was doing a lot of preventive work with children at the Child Guidance Center. And we were very compatible. We had the same ideas about art education. So together we started the children's section of the Arts Festival. I was on the board of the Arts Festival. I had been staging important exhibitions for them. And they said, in fact, I was on their steering committee and planning committee. And one day they said, wouldn't it be a good idea to have a children's art exhibit? And I said, oh, if you want something for children, let me think about this and I'll work out a plan and present it to you. So they liked what I suggested, and I got Judy Rubin to work on it with me. And it wasn't an exhibition, per se. It was a section of the festival where children could go and express themselves with materials, all kinds of materials. We rode away and got donations. I'll never forget all that colored chalk that came, cases and cases of colored chalk. It was so much. We wrote to a company that manufactures it, and they were evidently discontinuing it and wanted a write-off. So they sent us cartons and cartons of colored chalk. When the project was finished, there was so much of it, and I had been to India and had visited a child care center there and was impressed with how they were operating in Delhi with no materials, watered-down paints and cast-off toys that some of the embassy people had given this daycare center. So I sent off all the colored chalk. It cost a fortune, but I sent it to India, and I guess they're still using it. And they had a place where they could draw, and they had a place where they could express themselves with body movement. And they did all kinds of things. There's a fountain there next to the IBM building, and we got some scrap foam, you know, that white stuff, and we showed them how they could saw this stuff and make boats out of it. So they made boats, and the boats were all floating in the pond next to the IBM building. It was really terrific. And they've developed it further, and it was a big deal. And it's still going strong. It's a big part of the
family. When did you start this children's section?
Oh, about 5 years ago, I guess.
Is there anything more you can tell me about the public relations program for WQED that you did?
This same friend of mine at the Suntelli had a wife, Dorothy Daniel, who was just so terrific. And she called me one day. I think I told you this, didn't I? How she called and said, will you come down and do a, we need a volunteer. We don't have any money, but we're going to start educational television. And I need you. I'm here all alone. I've just engaged I'm trying to engage a secretary, but I need a PR person. And we have no money. And will you help me out? So I went down and started the public relations department for WQED.
Do you know the approximate date?
Well, that was, I can tell you. '54 was when I produced You, the Artist, so it was 1953 we started WQED, and You, the Artist was a TV program that I produced for a year, and we had people like Henry Kerner, Gordon Washburn, people who could talk for a half an hour and demonstrate different things about modern art, and it ran for a year. And it was really very exciting because this was the beginning of educational TV. Pittsburgh's WQED was the first educational television station in the country, and it was exciting to be a part of it.
Is there anything you can tell me about your relationships with colleagues, with other artists, with other people you work with? Anything that stands out?
Artists?
Any colleagues that you have worked with?
Well, the Suntelli, it was fun. I mean, the Post-Gazette, when I won this award, I didn't realize I had actually been chosen as one of the seven. Except the feature writer, Gabe Ireton, who was assigned to write my biography, called and he said, I have been asked to write a biography on you because you must know that you are in the finals of a competition. There were about 200 people nominated for the Outstanding Citizens Award, and it's been narrowed down. I can't tell you to how many, but it's in the final stage now, and you are a finalist, and I need to know more about you. So he asked me some questions, and he said, what was your question?
Tell me anything about relationships with colleagues.
Oh, he said, he asked me questions, and he'd call me every couple of days. And I would answer his questions. And finally, he called and he said, Anita, my boss is bothering me. He wants to know, why did she get into this? And what's it all about? Why did she do all these things? And he said, why the heck did you do all those things? And I said, well, I'm beginning to wonder. But I think that I just wanted to do a job for some artists who needed some promotion, and they needed someone to help them. And he said, well, who were some of these artists? I'd like to talk to one. My boss says, talk to somebody that she's helped and get a statement from them. So I said, well, talk to Nora Speier. She is an important, she's known internationally as an important artist. And she was one of the kids that I taught in the studio in Mom Freund's basement before I was married. So he called Tilly, and Tilly Speier said, well, Nora is in Europe. She'll be back. She'll be in Philadelphia later this week. So he said, I can't seem to get to her. So the next time he called, he said, I'm hot on her trail. I think I'm going to catch her in Philadelphia this weekend. So he did, and guess what she said? He said, how much, can you give me a statement about how Anita Morgenstern influenced your artistic career? She said, not really at all. That really brought me down a peg. And he had a hard time getting a statement. There's a art, what's his name? Not left. Lubitz, Arthur Lubitz, is one of the up-and-coming architects in this community. I understand he's real hot stuff now. And he came up to me at a preview at the King Picture Gallery one day and said, you don't remember me, I was a student of yours. So I said, oh, Arthur, you... He was about 14 years old, and he came to my classes, and he was so talented, and his family didn't know anything about art, and so I just sort of took him under my wing. And whenever I went to any place special, I'd call Arthur and say, do you want to come? I need a hand to help me hang an exhibition. He was a big, strong fellow, a little boy. And he helped me on a lot of projects. And then I said, you know, you ought to be in the Saturday morning classes at the museum. And you ought to be, then you ought to go from there into the Saturday morning classes at the Carnegie Tech, now Carnegie Mellon University. So I got him into these classes, and from the Saturday morning classes at Tech, he went into the School of Architecture, and I recommended him for it, and here he is. He was first in his class, and he's doing a terrific, you know, he's really...
Well, these were students you're telling me about. What about contemporaries, colleagues?
Oh, my peers. I've enjoyed some good relationships with Pittsburgh artists. The Post-Gazette mentioned Russell Twiggs. He's that handsome, dark-haired, white-haired man that you see walking along Warwood Avenue. He's at Carnegie Mellon. The sculptors I've enjoyed working with. Marie Kelly is one of my favorites. She's a painter. Let's see, who else? We developed friendships with artists around the world, too. When we went to Venice and bought a couple of paintings from the Venice Biennale, we found an artist that we thought was very talented, and he was from Madrid. So when we went to Madrid, we contacted him through the gallery there and introduced ourselves and said we own one of your paintings, and we really enjoyed being with him. That was loads of fun. Very talented.
Can you give me his name?
Vela, Vincenta Vela, V-I-N-C-E-N-T-A, V-E-L-A. And I remember on that same trip we stopped in Paris and Dick said, now we've shot our wad in Venice, let's not buy any more art this trip. So we were walking along the Champs-Élysées and he said, I'll take you for a walk. And we'll pass all the art galleries because they're closed on Saturday. I just didn't want you to be tempted on a weekday. And he said, you can look in the windows and you can wish they were open, but they're all closed. So we walked along and the gallery Rivoire was open. So I said, oh, it's open, we've got to go in. So we went in and there, I felt someone staring at me from behind. I turned around and it was a girl who had been a volunteer of mine at Pittsburgh Plan for Art the first year I opened it. And so we flew into each other's arms, and she was very French by this time. And she was running the gallery Rivoire. And she showed me some drawings. That Mathieu is the one of the ones she showed me, and she dropped a few names like Dave Thompson, bought one very similar to it, and the Museum of Modern Art bought one of the same series. And I just happened to have one left, and you know what happened. Now I have it. So that she was a peer that, you know, they turn up everywhere.
What was her name?
Gee, I've forgotten it.
Before I ask you more questions about your children, is there anything else that you'd like to tell me about your professional life that I haven't asked?
It's been sort of mixed up. It was public relations, it was art, it was being an impresario, an art impresario. It was teaching and lots of things.
Do you want to tell me the difference between the way you were raised and the way you raised your children?
Dick and I were always very aware that times were changing. And during the New Deal, there were changes, and I remember my father being very anti-New Deal, and he said, it's awful the way things are changing, and this is ridiculous, and we're getting into Bolshevism, you know. He just thought it was the end of everything that was good, and I thought to myself, there are more changes coming, and by gosh, I think we should prepare our children for change, because I was ready for change, but a lot of my young peers were not. The kids I grew up with, I still feel, have standards that are just very confused. You know, everything was what money could buy, the clothes you wear, the parties you go to. It all seemed very superficial to me. And I thought I was lucky that my parent, my mother especially, she went along with me on most of my views. So I thought, and I persuaded Dick, I think he agreed all along, that we should prepare the children for even more drastic changes that were going to occur. Now they, you know, Judy learned how to cook. Jimmy even learned how to cook. I weaned them very early, and they became independent. They were able to cope with all kinds of things that are difficult for some of the others their age. And I think this is the heritage that we wanted to give them, and I think they're grateful for it.
I want to go into a little more detail about your children's marriages.
Judy was married before Jim. She's been married about 12 years.
How old was she when she was married?
Oh, she was out of college about a year, so I guess she was about 23. She and Robert went to St. John's School together in Annapolis. It's liberal arts college fashioned after Oxford in England, and based on the 100 great books and a very scholarly atmosphere. They met there, and they were married about a year after Robert. Robert majored in music. He's a flutist, and he went to Yale and was in an accelerated program. He started majoring in music at Yale before he was, I think he was about 16. And then he realized that the best music had been written. He said, I'm quoting him. So he said, I decided I didn't want to be a composer and I wasn't a good enough flutist. So then he heard about St. John, so he was behind Judy, even though he's a little older. And they graduated together, and they had a rocky first year, I think, and during which they went to Greece and tried to find what they wanted to do, just like the kids in the 60s did. And,
what is his last name?
Licht, L-I-C-H-T. I got off on the wrong foot with Robert. We talk about it often. He came to visit, and we didn't establish rapport as rapidly as we should have, but now he's just like a son to me, and he calls me Mom. I never asked him to. I don't know when it started. He heard Judy calling me Mom, and one day I realized, I said, you're calling me Mom. He said, I am I not? He said, I've always felt that way about you. But not always, he said. It came gradually, and we're very close.
What does he do now?
Well, he is a philosopher, and he was teaching philosophy at St. John's, but you know, they've cut philosophy out of the curricula everywhere. And so he didn't get tenure, and he went into insurance because they realized their children both needed private school. They needed the challenge of a special school, and they couldn't afford it, so he started selling insurance, and he was really unhappy doing this. It wasn't his thing at all. So he got out of that, and then he went back into the insurance field, but as a teacher. He works for a company that prepares training programs, and they sell them to a lot of the big insurance companies, and it's a conglomerate of big insurance companies, I guess, sort of, it's like a think tank, sort of. They finance it, like some of the big corporations do, the think tanks, and then they prepare these training courses and sell them to back to these insurance companies.
Tell me something about their children.
Oh, they're great kids, not just because I'm their grandmother, but they have a wonderful home life. The boys are only 15 months apart.
What are their names?
So, Raphael, not for the painter, but for a famous philosopher, Raphael, and Jacob. And are we on? We were talking about the boys. They have an avid curiosity about everything. Raffi is interested in science, and he passed me up long ago. Jacob is slightly interested in science, and on the phone one day I said, I saw that frog again that you saw up in the country, and I said it was on the porch. He said, was it a frog or a toad? I said, I don't know. He said, did it have big bumps? This was when he was 5 or 6 years old. Did it have bumps on it? And I said, yes. He said, then it's a toad. Grandma, try to remember the difference. So, you see, they passed me up when they were 5, and I'm learning from them already. And the biggest treat they can have is to go to Smithsonian. They take their friends to the Smithsonian with a picnic lunch, and they eat out on the lawn of the Smithsonian, and they go to the puppet show and the films, and they are avid readers, especially Raffi, and they're athletic, and they're fun, they're witty, and they're good kids.
Tell me something about your son and his marriage.
Jim married a girl who, I think I told you, is a Southern Baptist. She went to school with him also. They attended NYU, the graduate school, which is called the Institute of Fine Arts in New York, and they both got their PhDs from there. Anne is just a delight. She has a nice light touch. Of course, she's a bright girl, and we have this common interest in art, the three of us, and Jim is not the easiest person. He is a dedicated scholar. He's a plugger. He always has been, and he doesn't let anything interfere with his goal of being a scholar. And he can be charming, and he is charming, but if he's in the middle of writing a book, that's it, and he won't stop for anything. I remember having guests up to the country, people that he had been friendly with, and he was furious because he was up there to do some work, and he was going to rest when he had the time, and he didn't want to get involved with anything else. Anne is one who can, she knows how to handle this, and she has great respect for his ability, and she's a helpmate. She has her own career, but Jim's comes first, and it's a very good marriage.
What is her career?
She is an art historian, too. Her field is medieval sculpture.
Has he written any books?
He's putting the finishing touches on a book about his site in southern Turkey, a Byzantine church.
What organizations do you belong to other than art?
Well, I was thinking I'd better clean house. I belong to ORT and the Council of Jewish Women. I should have listed the council first. And the Sisterhood of the Temple. And the Society of Sculptors, the Associated Artists, Pittsburgh Council for International Visitors, the I contribute to the Arts Festival and the History and Landmarks Foundation, Conservancy and all those things. I'm very vitally interested in conservancy and the environment, Forestry Association.
Can you contrast Pittsburgh today with Pittsburgh yesterday?
In what way?
Socially.
Pittsburgh was a very exciting city during the period when I was being very active in cultural things. When we were starting WQED, the Allegheny Conference was redeveloped.